Falcon Cast Podcast, the ultimate podcast for the ultimate fan. Now, here's AtlantaFalcons.com's own Jay Adams and Daniel Cox.
Welcome into another edition of the Falcon Cast Podcast here on AtlantaFalcons.com. We're in week 10 here at Flowery Branch. Joining me to my left, Daniel Cox, Jay Adams here. And we got another special podcast for everybody today.
It's a special week. Every edition is a new experience.
It absolutely is. It absolutely is.
We have some good ones for today.
I think so, too. So we're going to get into some... we got three game changers for you. Mm-hmm. We got a little locker room report, which is brand new. Nice. So you guys are going to get to see a little of what was said in the locker room this week. And we're going to go back to which is better, because... It's just one of those things that we've got to do.
Absolutely.
And then a little most valuable Falcon. So we've got a full slate. I wanted to start off, though, because we had we've got our crew back here, our interns Maurice, yes. Dylan over here, Rob at the switchboard. He's not an intern. He's very much a full-timer here. And Maurice went to an event on Tuesday. Hmm. And... showed up at the event looking kind of interesting. If we can we show this photo here of Maurice, how he had a little bit of a wardrobe malfunction. Maurice, what is going on here?
Jay's week 10, man.
It's week 10. We should know how to button our shirts and to put them on correctly. What do we have an excuse for this?
Pretty much we do. Cutting my mother grass.
Okay.
So driving to the event, pull up, get there, had on my undershirt.
Yeah.
Put on my shirt, realize, I get out the car, realize it's on backwards. As soon as I get out the car, Dylan has his phone.
Always at the ready. Oh, yeah. The TMZ of AtlantaFalcons.com. Got it.
In his defense, he hasn't shown up to the office with his shirt backwards yet.
That is true.
That's fair enough.
That's a very good point.
And always clean, too.
Always clean. All right, we're going to give you that. You had a nice little cardigan on earlier in the week.
Always matching. Very nice. Always matching.
Always matching. We can allow this little malfunction, but I was... saying, I could understand if it was like a T-shirt. Like it, sometimes we've done that, right?
Yeah.
Put on our T-shirt backwards. But would you think it was a turtleneck? Like nothing up here, kind of.
No.
Gotcha. All right. Well, it happens. You're here to learn, and you're learning.
He's here to do a job, and he was focused on getting there.
Exactly.
And got there early, too, Dan.
There you go.
Got there early.
Yeah. Got there early.
Hey, you know what? If he shows up early, I can live with this.
I can live with the wardrobe malfunction. So, let's talk about some guys who do know how to put their uniforms on, right?
Okay.
That segue courtesy of Matt Moore of the digital media department. So, Sunday is a very special game. Obviously, the Falcons playing the 8-1 Seahawks. The team salute to service game, which is dedicated to military members, all six branches. There's going to be 120 National Guard members there, flag runners. There's going to be this huge field-wide American flag for the anthem, and then a smaller flag. There's going to be a little halftime ceremony and video and all this other stuff. So a lot of great stuff planned for Sunday's game against Seattle. So I know you're looking forward to it.
Always. I love this part right here. I love the flag. It's a giant flag.
It's really amazing to see it take up the
entire field. Yeah, it's incredible.
And so, I spoke to a bunch of players today and yesterday who have some ties to the military and family members and things like that. And so, certainly a special event for them. No, it's a special event for me because my father is actually a Vietnam veteran, Jerry Adams. We've got the national anthem playing for him in my head. Jerry Adams there served in the Vietnam War there.
Wow.
And that's my father, and Dad, love you, and thanks for your service, and something I always think about. I keep my dad's dog tags as well.
Okay.
He watches the podcast every week with Carol. So Jerry and Carol sit down and watch the podcast, and so this will be a special one. He doesn't know that I did this.
Yeah, but I'm sure he'll appreciate it.
Looks good there.
Yeah, he does.
A little M60 there.
I like it.
Yeah, you look just like your dad, Jay.
Do I? I'll have to show you a picture of my mother. I look very much like my mother as well. So certainly know where I came from. But again, thanks, Dad, for your service, and love you a lot. So.
Absolutely.
But I know you've had, from being with the Falcons here, some military experiences.
Yeah, some military experiences. A couple of seasons ago, we accompanied a large group of players down to Fort Gordon, which is, I can't remember which direction it is, but I know it's a good 3 or 4 hour drive from Atlanta.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know how we got there?
How'd you get there?
We flew in Black Hawk helicopters.
Oh, man. I've never gotten to do that. You get to do all the cool stuff.
That was really cool. I know Rob was with us that day.
Yeah.
It was a whole caravan or Black Hawk helicopter full of, or two of them, I think, two or three, full of cheerleaders, players, and me and Rob.
Not a bad way to travel, guys.
Yep.
One of and, the scariest moments of my life.
Yeah. I mean, I believe it. Can we discuss this? So we asked Rob to find this photo, and it's a gem. Mm-hmm. It is a real gem. And it's somehow gotten lost in the digital world. I think there's some kind of cover up going on.
I think if we dug a little more, we'll be able to find it.
Rob, what happened on this thing?
Well, I have a fear. Not really a fear of heights, more so a fear of falling.
I can totally identify with that.
And on the way back from the...
Now these are open, right?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
It's a huge military helicopter seating probably like 11 people in there. And you have a few rows, and the doors are wide open. Mm-hmm. So on the way there, it's a nice, smooth ride. The doors are open. The breeze is flowing. And you're like, oh, this is great. On the way back, our pilot tells us that we have some time to kill. So we're going to do some tricks. And his tricks... There were a few. Some where he was just, you know, rocking back and forth, and you're parallel to the ground, so you feel like you're gonna fall. And then his specialty was he would fly up and then just free fall for about 500 feet, and I thought I was gonna die. So the picture was me just in the corner of the Black Hawk, just like grabbing everything with all my legs and my arms.
Yeah. White as a ghost. Well, here's the thing, and this is, I don't think this is the seat that Rob was sitting in, but when I was trying to determine, you know, the best place to sit when I got, you know, on the helicopter, and one of the servicemen that was there with us, he's like, well, this seat is called the hurricane seat.
Yeah.
And that it's the seat, like, one, I think that's, he was in that seat coming back.
Yeah.
And basically, it's the seat right by the door. So all that wind,
and they call it the hurricane seat because of the wind.
The wind just blowing on you. I mean, it almost makes you sick just because it's so much wind.
Yeah. Oh,
and the worst part was I was the only one that didn't get that memo about it being the hurricane seat. So nobody sat next to me on the way home.
Oh, okay.
And they had these seat belts that, you know, crossed over your chest.
Yeah.
And because nobody was sitting next to me, they were free, and they were just like smacking me in the face the whole ride home.
So not only are you sick, but you're getting hit in the head by these.
Smacked in the face by metal belt clips.
But for a great cause, because I'm sure those soldiers had a heck of a time with you guys.
Oh, yeah. It was a great day. They had a whole service. You know, the guys talked to them for a little while, and then they signed autographs and spent a lot of time with them. This is pretty interesting. Like I said, it was a 3 or 4 hour drive, roughly. It took us about 40 minutes to get there by helicopter.
Amazing. Yeah. Be a heck of a way to travel, I'll tell you that much.
It was interesting. So. It was definitely one of those experiences that you know, not many people get, and it was cool. You know, yeah. Black Hawk helicopter. That was pretty awesome.
Oh, man, that would be awesome.
It was one. I know we got to move on, but
no, you're good.
It was. I don't remember if it was coming back or heading down there, but you know, the pilot was a trickster, but he lowered down to the ground. Like he wasn't parallel necessarily, but he was low, and he was flying beside the road. And I'll just never forget, like, flying by the road. And, like, the cars look like they're just, like just slowly going down the road.
Must have been a trip for the cars to see you guys flying so low as well.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Very cool. Well, we're certainly appreciative of all the military members out there, past and present, for their service. We do want to give a shout-out to Sergeant Embry and his comrades over in Kandahar, Afghanistan. He sent us... a nice photo there representing Matt Ryan over in Afghanistan. Very cool stuff. We're going to have plenty more military galleries, photo galleries, videos, all that kind of stuff on the website, AtlantaFalcons.com, throughout the rest of the week. So definitely check that stuff out.
Absolutely. And these guys, all hours of the day, when they're, you know, when they're off duty or whatever, they're sitting down to watch those games, whether it's 4 a.m. or, you know, 6 in the evening.
You're right.
And that's their time, not our time.
Exactly. You know, so. Exactly. So thanks to them for all they do. And, you know, if there's any military members out there watching the podcast, thanks for tuning in. Yes. So let's get on to the Seattle matchup. Mm-hmm. Obviously, a very, very important matchup. We keep saying this every week, but as the losses pile up, they get more and more important.
Yeah.
Falcons now sitting at 2-6, playing the 8-1, as I mentioned, Seattle Seahawks, a team that, you know, obviously these two teams met last year
right.
in the playoffs, well documented, but very different this year. It seems like, you know, obviously the Falcons have had their troubles with the injuries and different things that have happened during the year. Seattle seems like it's starting to eke out some games as opposed to dominate some of yeah. them. And so certainly an interesting little matchup here, I think, for Sunday.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned that eking out of some wins. I think the Seahawks of this season seem, even on paper, they look very similar to the Falcons of last year. With those, they had some close games. I mean, they've had yeah. there was a handful of games that were big wins, you know, and they're certainly capable of putting up points. But they've had some really close games, and they've won a lot of close games. So I feel like this is an 8-1 team that some things could go against them on any given Sunday, so to speak, and I can see a loss there for sure. But they're certainly talented, and you know they're led by that kid Russell Wilson.
You're pretty good.
Maybe you've heard of him.
Yeah, pretty heard of him. pretty heard of him. Pretty good. Maybe you have heard of him. Here's our first game changer. Mm-hmm. He has 19 victories in his first 25 starts, which puts Wilson fifth on the all-time list through the first two seasons, behind Ben Roethlisberger, Dan Marino, and Joe Flacco, and also Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan, yeah. One more win.
Yeah, Matt and Joe both have 20 wins.
Yeah.
In their first two seasons, or first 25 starts.
So that would tie the three of them up.
Yeah, if Russell were to win.
If Russell were to win on Sunday.
Yeah. So let's. Let's not let that happen.
Absolutely. But Matt Ryan is 3-0 versus Seattle, including the playoffs, and has three-plus touchdowns in two of those three games.
Right.
So, you know, maybe it's a turnaround game. You would like to think so. You know, Matt's had a couple of rough weeks.
Yeah, no,
seven absolutely. Turnovers. You know, certainly not the way we're used to seeing him play. Certainly not the way he wants to play. So
well, and he mentioned on Wednesday – and this is a question that we kind of expect from the media, but the question was something to the effect if Matt felt like he was pushing things a little bit, you know, maybe forcing some throws, and I think most of us would probably say, yeah, that's not an unreasonable
sure.
Assumption. And he said, yeah, I probably was, you know, trying to put some balls in some spots I probably should have thought twice about.
Yeah,
but.
Well, you're without your top two wide receivers.
Absolutely.
And, you know, that forces your hand a little bit on what you can do and what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you're largely thrown to wide receivers who you have experience with.
Right.
You have a rapport with them, but maybe not as much as, you know, your top two targets. So I can see where you would force some stuff.
But if there's a weak not to force things, or if there's a defense yeah. not to force it against, I'd say it's Seattle's.
Yeah.
And that pass defense is pretty good.
Pass defense is good. Run defense, however, let's talk a little bit about this. You know, we think about the Seattle defense, and certainly a very stacked defense. There's mm-hmm. a lot there that the Seahawks work extremely well with. But they're allowing 116.2 rushing yards per game, which is number 19 in the NFL, allowing 405 yards rushing in the past two games.
Wow.
So the ground game, it would seem, is there.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's it's interesting. That's almost opposite of what we've always heard. You know, you build defense, you stop the run,
sure,
all that. These guys, it's almost like they're built to stop the pass with, you know, the secondary that they have. You know, and historically, or at least last season, they were a good run defense, Seattle, and I think they maybe have been a little better than the stats say. Like that 405 yards in two games will kind of blow your average a little bit.
Yeah.
But hey, the yards were there, and the other teams took them, and they allowed it. I think they still won those games, but I think if we're looking at, you know, places or, you know, cracks in the armor, so to speak, for against Seattle, if we're looking for those places that maybe the Falcons can gain an edge. I think that's definitely one of them.
I think you're absolutely right. I think you've got to look at the rushing game this week as you know, one of those areas where you could probably do some damage and probably accomplish a lot of the things that you want to accomplish. You know, the Falcons have been trying to get the run game going here, and they ran way better last week against Carolina in the 34-10 loss. But you know, you want to see them take that next step in the rushing game and really see a guy like Steven Jackson come out and dominate a game. We have not seen that.
And a guy like Steven Jackson get the opportunities, you know, the run opportunities. And last week was glaring, you know, with the turnovers. Those turnovers, you're losing those possessions. And so, I mean, some of those turnovers came, you know, halfway through drives. And, they weren't able to finish those drives. And like you said, I felt like they were moving the ball pretty well on the ground. They just lost the opportunities to continue to do it.
Right. That's what happens when you get behind.
Yeah.
You get those turnovers. You get behind. Suddenly you're forced to.
We saw the same thing against Arizona.
Sure. Absolutely. And that's one of those things. You get behind, you've got no choice. Yeah. So, but if you do get behind against Seattle, you've got to contend with their pass defense, which is really where their big strength is. They're number two in the NFL right now, allowing 179.8 yards per game through the air, and have 13 interceptions, which is tied for number one. So this is a team that would love to add to Matt Ryan's interception total over the past two, coming up on three games.
Yeah. Less than 200 yards passing.
That's really astounding.
Yeah.
Really astounding.
I mean, that's if you see that stat and you know what you know about the Falcons passing offense right now and where it's at with injuries and everything, and we're going to cross our fingers about Roddy maybe coming back this week. I think that would be a huge boost. I think that would be a huge boost in so many ways, obviously in the passing game, but I really think some of those offensive guys could get us, you know, a shot in the arm a little bit with Roddy returning. So, and that would help against Seattle because Roddy's an experienced guy. He's faced Seattle a couple times. He's definitely had his moments against Richard Sherman, that one of the top guys in the league, and Seattle's definitely number one cornerback. So I'd rather see a matchup of, you know, White versus Sherman than, you know, maybe having Sherman covering Harry Douglas or something like that.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's a matchup I'll be looking at. I don't know. As far as Roddy goes, we don't have any information as of yet, but I would say, you know, considering how close he probably was to playing against Carolina, it certainly bodes well for this week. And so you do hope that guy is back because he adds a completely different element. And maybe I'll talk about that a little bit later on in the podcast here. Foreshadowing?
Yes, possibly.
All right.
That's a great movie technique there.
Yes.
We're learning a lot of things in this business.
Little cliffhanger there. All right, well, let's take these fine folks into the locker room,
shall we? All right, let's do that.
Let's go into the locker room for our locker room report and give you some quotes, some things that stood out to us this week. First, let's start off with, hey, Sean Weatherspoon is back.
All right.
Yeah. If there was a reason to celebrate, that would be it. You know, we've been so short on good news here lately that I think Weatherspoon being back and pretty healthy, he says, hey, I could have played last Sunday, you know, but obviously because of the rules for a player who is on IR with a designation to return, not eligible to come back until Tampa Bay in 2 weeks. But he returns to practice this week, and here's a little bit of what he had to say.
Excited, you know. Haven't had a chance to run around, and I want to, you know, see how it feels to be out there with the guys. And it should be pretty fun.
What's been the most difficult part?
Just watching. You have to watch it. You see some plays that are out there, you know. You see guys make plays. You're like, man, I want to make that play too. And, you know, sometimes you see some opportunities that you know you could have capitalized on or you think you can. So, I mean, that's just, you just play the what-if game, you know, after every game. You know, what if this, what if that. It's pretty tough.
Daniel, I want to put you in a scenario here.
Okay. All right.
Let's say after two weeks. Okay. Well, not even 2 weeks. We'll go halfway through the second podcast that we did this year.
Right.
I pull you off.
Oh no.
And you have to sit on the side for six straight podcasts and watch.
Yeah.
Watch. That's all you can do. Yeah. And coach, maybe.
Yeah. Offer some input.
Offer some input here and there, some ideas. Mm-hmm. How would that strike you?
That would be difficult.
Yeah.
I mean, if nothing else, it's just because we enjoy doing this, you know?
Exactly.
And, you know, this is our win. You know, we come in here and it's funny that you say that because we hear so often about the players when we ask those types of questions after they've missed time, you know, how difficult is it to stand back? And they talk about how, you know, they're part of the team, but they're really not because they're not on the field and they're limited with what their interactions and how they can participate. I would feel very similar, you know, limited. I'd feel like I was kind of not part of the group, you know?
Yeah. And that's exactly what Sean said. It's been a really, really difficult six, probably 7 weeks, including the bye week, where he's been relegated to doing not a whole lot of anything other than obviously rehabbing and working his way back. But how crucial is it that you get these, this situation where you've got these few days this week where you can be on the field and you can be getting that work in on the field to get ready for a game return, hopefully against Tampa Bay in 2 weeks. I mean, to get yourself into game shape, I think it's obviously going to take a little longer than a week, but getting those couple extra days, knowing that you can practice this week without the prospect of playing on Sunday against Seattle, certainly I would think would help.
Yeah, and you talk about shots in the arm. You know, we mentioned that with Roddy. I don't think there's a player on defense that would ignite some of these guys more than having Spoon return.
Absolutely, and with the way the younger players have played, your Joplo Bartu, your Paul Warlow, it's going to be interesting to see when Spoon comes back. How does that linebacking core work?
Yeah.
How does it look? Because you've got some talent now that you're going to have. It's a good problem to have.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you got some talent now. You got to be thinking about how do we get these guys on the field.
Yeah, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what they do. I mean, obviously Spoon's going to be on the field, three down linebacker. Clearly, you know, between Warlow, Bartu, what decisions do they make about, you know, who's going to stay on the field in pass situations and all that kind of stuff? But at the same time, it's you're getting another weapon back, and I think you know the experience that Bartu and Warlow have had. Playing all those snaps, and you know, since Spoon's been gone, they're better than they were 6 weeks ago or 7 weeks ago, and that's really going to benefit the defense and that experience. And having Spoon come back, I think it's going to be interesting to see how. And again, I'm talking about energy. I think there's going to be a new level of energy, and some of those guys that have had all that experience, and then all of a sudden, maybe they're not going to have to be. Like the guy, like the Johnny on the spot. Maybe that's going to be Spoon, and you know what I mean. Like I just feel like they're going to kind of get lifted up a little bit. But I'm definitely curious to see what that linebacker arrangement is going to look like moving forward once he gets back.
Definitely, that's certainly a couple of weeks away, unfortunately. But let's get back to this week. Let's go to quarterback Matt Ryan.
Yes.
He's got some familiarity with Seattle. He spoke a little bit about it today.
You know, we've played these guys a lot since I've been in the league. We've played them a lot. Certainly they know us. We know them. We're a little bit different offensively than we were the last time we saw them. They're a little bit different defensively. Clemens back kind of changes a lot of what they do in their front seven. And certainly they've got some different looks in their front than we saw in the playoff game last year. It's not to say they can't do it again against us, but... they're a little bit different, but we know them. They know us. I don't think there's an advantage either way.
And that's a good point to remember is that these are two very different teams.
Yeah.
You know, they played each other less than a year ago.
Right.
But these, again, two very different teams. A couple extra weapons on their side. A couple of weapons that you're without on the Falcons side.
Right, right.
And I think that makes for a very different game. Yes, there's some familiarity there. I think you can draw on, you know, maybe some of the things that helped you beat Richard Sherman on some plays. Cam Chancellor is still just that tough, tough safety that you've got to keep an eye
on. He's their William Moore.
He is absolutely their William Moore. And so the familiarity there helps. But again, to Ryan's point, two different teams.
Yeah, two different teams. You know, talking about that defense, he mentioned Chris Clemens, a defensive lineman. Mm-hmm. He's coming back. He had been injured significantly. I don't recall. Some sort of knee or leg injuries, ankles maybe. In the game prior to the second round playoff game that the Falcons won last season. And so many people around the country, when you were listening or reading about that game and the days afterwards, they felt like Seattle's, some of the lack of pressure that they were not able to generate, or the lack of pressure or the pressure they couldn't generate on Matt, was because of Chris Clemons being out of there. So him coming back is a big boost for them. But even when you look on the other side of the ball, like look at Seattle's offense. Again, we think about, they're a running team, they're a run first team, and they've got they're number five in the league in rushing, 147 yards a game, but they've got 25 touchdowns, 8 of them were on the ground.
Yeah.
So that says, and one of them was a special teams touchdown. So the other, however many that is, I'm not going to do the quick math.
No, let's not math.
I'm not even going to try. I'm just going to keep moving ahead.
Just keep going.
But they're passing the ball,
Yeah.
And the Seattle team that we knew about last season and that they've been building was built around an offensive line and Marshawn Lynch in the run game. So it's definitely a different team. Russell Wilson's coming along.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of Russell Wilson, we spoke to William Moore, the media spoke to William Moore this week, and he talked a little bit about coming from playing Cam Newton one week to playing Russell Wilson, and here's what he had to say.
No doubt about it. Going against Cam last week definitely helped us out a lot, versus the Reed. But Russell Wilson's a different kind of quarterback. He's beyond, triple threat, man. He can throw the ball and not take anything away from Cam or what he do. But Russell, he's like a different type, man.
Two extremely different types of quarterbacks. So they can do a lot of the same things. But Cam is so big.
Yeah.
So big. And you saw, just how you have a quarterback who is that size with that ability, with his agility, his balance, all those different things, how he can get out of trouble. We saw that, and we've seen that for a couple of years now. Wilson is a different kind of quarterback. He's smaller. He's close to the ground, and he can beat you with his quickness.
Yeah.
He's not going to beat you with physicality per se, but if he gets out in some open space, he's got the ball. I mean, extremely dangerous weapon to contend with.
Yeah. And again, we talk about differences from last season. I took a look at how mobile has Russell Wilson been this season. It may surprise you because last season we heard so much about, some of those young quarterbacks, not excuse me, not in the mold of Newton necessarily, but a little more, like you say, agile, quicker than can fast necessarily, and they make things happen just by moving around and waiting for holes to come open and things like that. Last season he had 94 rushes, 489 yards, 4 touchdowns. We're in week 10 this year. He has 67 rushes for 375 yards.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, and again, it's two mobile quarterbacks. But like William Moore said, and like you were saying, tackling them, even that just that experience, that process is completely different.
Yeah, but I think the same principles hold in that you've got to finish
absolutely
that tackle, and you saw the danger that you can get into when you don't finish a tackle on Cam Newton. I think Russell Wilson presents a lot of the same problems.
Yeah, definitely. So some of the principles, I think, are the same, and I think absolutely, that's the benefit. Because obviously it's, you want to hem them in, so to speak, with your defensive ends. And I thought the Falcons did a pretty nice job of keeping Newton from being so mobile. He had the second fewest rushing yards that he's had all season.
Yeah.
So I thought they did a nice job with that. And I think some of that came from experience, that they faced him a couple times. And I think that playoff game last season while all these guys are saying that, it's a different team and all this stuff, I think that experience, that successful experience in that moment, I think they learned some things about that Seattle team. And I don't think they forgot them because I think these guys definitely respect that team. And they're one of the better teams in the league. And I don't think they thought that last season they're just going to go away, Seattle. Mm-hmm. So, I think they remembered some of what they learned against those guys.
Sure. Sure. All right. Well, that was our first locker room report. That was pretty good. All right. Well, let's play some Which Is Better. We've got a friendly fire.
Which is better?
Take two guys on the Falcons. We're going to put them up against two other guys on the Falcons, and we're going to debate which tandem we think is better. because that's what Which Is Better is about. Yes, it is. So we've got two young linebackers, one Joplo Bartu, one Paul Warlow, having quite a year, undrafted rookies, having a very good year. On the other side, we've got Robert Alford, Desmond Trufant, two rookie cornerbacks drafted, albeit first and second round picks, also having a very good year. So which is better, the linebacker combination or the cornerback combination?
Pretty interesting. First of all, props to both of those corners, Trufant and Alford, last week for getting an interception each. That was Alford's second.
Yeah.
And Trufant's first. Are you okay over there?
I'm getting phone calls.
Oh, no. but which is better? It's in another interesting, two almost opposite ends of the extremes of travel getting to the NFL. You know, like you said, you know, both these are the guys on the right, Trufant, Alford, top two draft picks. Warlow and Bartu were guys that weren't sure they were going to be on the team when they came into camp, you know, so it's pretty interesting. Which is better? I'm going to go with the corners.
Okay.
Corners. You know, a little bit of what they, a little bit because of the games they put together last week. And again, if you somehow missed it or you've forgotten already, you should definitely watch Robert Alford's interception again.
Yeah.
It's really
a thing
nice
of beauty.
Just the way he managed to keep his feet in and just his presence of mind to and field awareness and is locationally where he was. That was a heads up, really smart play. I was impressed by that. But these guys have, you know, and nothing against Paul and Joplo, but these guys have gotten better progressively over the course of the season, and we've seen them start to make some plays, some big plays. You know, that offered interception, it kept points off the board to close the half. I think that was big. So I'm going to go with those two guys.
Awesome. You know, I think when I look at this and I see these four guys, I see the future. Yeah. It's like looking into the future. Is it not?
Nice.
It's like being, saw where I go. Yeah, it's like a little bit of a crystal ball. Okay. But you've got to like where you're at with these four guys.
Yeah.
I think through eight games, you've seen a lot from all of them. I think from just from a perspective of the odds being so much against you to be an undrafted rookie, to make a squad.
Yeah, and this
alone,
both those guys made the squad, you're right, before all the injuries came along.
Right. Let alone being guys that are not only starters, but relied upon.
Yeah.
Paul Warlow played 100% of the defensive snaps
on
Sunday against Carolina.
And it showed.
And it showed. He had 19 tackles in that game. So from that perspective, I'm going to go with the linebackers on this one. I love what the cornerbacks have done. And I think one of the big things that you can really look at and say, all right, these guys are doing what they were brought here to do is when you see what Panthers wide receiver Steve Smith said about Trufant and talked about how fluid he was and a lot of respect, mainly from his brothers playing Marcus, namely. But I think when you have a wide receiver like that who is known for his trash talk and known for, you know, not being very respectful respectful of your abilities and things of that nature, who knows what gets said on the field, but you hear these stories and so to have him come out and say, you know what, this is a guy I respect. He's a rookie. I know that, but I respect his lineage and where he came from and all that kind of stuff. I think that speaks volumes.
Absolutely.
But I like the two linebackers just because, man, when you talk about it from a scouting aspect and getting the bang for your buck, I mean, you got the bang for your buck with these two guys, Warlow and Bartu.
Yeah.
And I think they're going to be players here for a long time.
Yeah, I agree. And again, it's I think about those two guys and I think about Spoon being in the mix with those two.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting looking group, and then you think about that, and then you go to you move to the second level, and you've got some guys that you feel good about with Deku and Moore, and then now Alford and Trufant on the outsides maybe, and that's
I've been saying this, but I really like the way this defense shapes up for 2-3 years from now.
Yeah.
I really do. You got to love it because these young guys are taking their lumps.
Mm-hmm.
You're getting some losses here and there. You're taking your lumps. You're learning about these plays that maybe you're making mistakes on or whatever. I think confidence, once confidence sets in, it's going to be a completely different story. So I like what I see here with these four guys in particular.
Absolutely. So you got the linebackers and I have corners.
Exactly.
Fair enough.
All right. Well, now it's time to talk about a real serious subject, and that is in which is better. Which is the better bird of prey? Because this is a bird of prey.
Yes, it is.
Matchup. So
yes, it is.
We have, let's introduce this here. This is an Osprey.
Yes.
Okay. Otherwise known as?
A Seahawk.
This right. is a Seahawk.
Yes.
Right here? Where am I at? Here? Okay. Versus.
Let me hold this up just for.
Versus a Falcon. Look at that thing.
That's a menacing looking creature.
That's a Falcon right there. And
Seahawk.
The Seahawk.
Doesn't look very disinterested.
Seahawk is very disinterested. He's sitting on a post. Meanwhile, the Falcon is coming to ruin your dreams. So, the question is, which is better?
Yeah, which is better?
The Osprey or the Falcon? I'm just going to go ahead and I'm going to say the Falcon.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a given, right?
Right. So, it's not a gibbon. It's a given.
What did I say?
I thought you said given, but...
Given.
A gibbon is a kind of bird as well. Oh. I thought you would have picked up on my avian humor.
All my bird study has been focused on these.
Unbelievable. I come with quality gibbon jokes. And
I come with some quality stats on some
birds. I can't
birds.
Wait to hear some of your stats. But that's why I was going to go. I'm just going to say the Falcon, and I don't need a reason.
Yeah, exactly.
But you actually have reasons.
Yes.
So I'm just going to give the stage to you.
All right. So, first of all, both animals... I had to kind of have an equalizer stat.
Can we say that you're do we all remember those of you who have watched or
long
listened
time
to the
podcast? Listeners.
Yeah, podcast listeners who were with us from the start.
Yes.
Might remember the education that we received on beavers last year from Daniel Cox. So in that same vein, Daniel, take it away.
Okay.
And give us a bird lesson.
Both birds are widely distributed around the globe, around the world. Falcons, and when we're talking about a falcon, we're talking about the peregrine falcon.
Oh, okay.
Yes. So that bird is found on all continents except Antarctica. He can survive in a wide variety of habitats, including urban cities, the tropics, deserts, and the tundra.
Oh, the tundra as well.
Yes, and obviously they can migrate long distances.
Oh, okay.
Seahawks can do the same thing. They're the most widespread raptor in the world.
That's a raptor?
Apparently. They can be found on every continent except Antarctica, and they are also migratory. So that's kind of the equalizer of the two birds.
What sets them apart, Daniel?
Yes, what sets them apart? Speed,
okay.
For one thing. The speed of a peregrine falcon has been said to reach 175 miles an hour, Jay.
Wow. That's almost as fast as Rob drives.
Yeah. But get
That's
this.
That's not true. Just in case the man is
Rob's like, let's go find out.
Rob, you versus a falcon, who wins?
Which is better, Rob's car or a falcon?
Falcon hands down.
Yeah. Okay. Smart man. His company man right there.
That's right.
Listen to this. Experiments conducted by scientists put the bird's diving speed at approximately 200 miles an hour.
That's amazing.
So we talk about his diving speed. The falcon catches all his prey, or majority of it, in flight. That's pretty impressive. Using his great speed, the falcon delivers a powerful blow to its prey with a half-closed foot. And then listen to this.
I'm listening.
This kills me. It just blows me away.
With bated breath.
So the falcon attacks in the air, and then he lets his prey go, and then he swoops down and grabs him in midair or after it falls to the ground. So there's a little bit of a brutality aspect to this to the falcon. That
a falcon will play with you before it
before he eats
you.
Yeah. It completely ends you.
Yeah.
Okay. So on the other hand,
all right. What does this osprey do?
Seahawks. They typically catch fish. That's their primary food source. This is kind of interesting, but I don't think it. Gives the osprey the edge over the falcon. They possess a reversible fourth toe, which allows him to grasp fish more securely by positioning two toes forward and two toes back. So it's double jointed, and then it kind of. grips it. And it also has these little spines that prevent a fish from wiggling free. All right. Am I losing you, Jay?
Next week's podcast live from the Atlanta Zoo.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or at least the pond down there.
You missed your calling, my friend.
Okay. Yeah. Hey, sponsorships. We're open. Open to Atlanta Zoo sponsorships.
Exactly.
Ospreys are obviously, like I said, excellent anglers. Ospreys caught fish on at least, and this is over several studies, Seahawks caught fish on at least one in every four dives, with success rates sometimes as high as 70%. The average time they spent hunting before making a catch was 12 minutes, which seems, when I think about a bird moving 200 miles an hour in the air after a target,
yeah,
and I think about a fish that takes 12 minutes, or a bird that takes 12 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty clear which the better animal.
Oh, it's clear. It's clear. All right, well.
So do you want a bird that can dive in the air and catch birds, other birds?
Other birds? Which one does that?
The falcon.
Tuned you out. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So the falcon wins.
Yes.
So course. The falcon's better.
Obviously.
Obviously. We all knew that.
Yeah.
Seahawk. Here you go.
All right.
Take flight. All right. Falcon wins. Which is better?
Which is better?
Falcon. All right. Well, that was, boy, that was quite an education.
That's one thing you can always count on from the podcast.
I mean, I don't, we got one more segment to get through, and I don't even know where to, that was amazing.
Yeah. Did you learn something?
No.
You didn't?
No.
Come on.
No.
You need to listen closer. Yes, I'll give you minutes. We'll review this after the podcast.
After the podcast, we can go through this, yes, again.
Of course.
Great. Awesome. All right. Well, how about we do a most valuable falcon and not the peregrine or Maltese falcon? The Atlanta Falcons.
Yeah. That works.
That works. Okay. Last week, I picked Harry Douglas, who had 3 catches and 82 yards. Daniel, you had Matt Ryan, 20 for 27, 219 yards, 1 touchdown, but those 3 interceptions.
Yeah.
So how do we call this one? I say I win.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have much of an argument against that.
Yeah. As much as I don't want to win that one, you know, just kind of happened. So I lead 4-3-1 with the 1 tie. Well, that tie could come down to it.
Yeah.
That tie could prove to be crucial for one of us.
Yeah, definitely.
So, all right.
You've won like 2 straight, I believe.
That's a winning streak.
Yeah.
So, let's keep it rolling, and I'll go ahead and go first with my guy.
Okay.
And let's welcome him back, because I really think he's going to play. I don't know. I have nothing to confirm that.
Yeah,
but
be careful saying that.
But here's where I roll the dice, though, because you remember a couple years ago, you chose Jason Snelling. He did not play.
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to roll the dice. I'm going to say, welcome back, Mr. Roddy White. Roddy White is going to be my most valuable Falcon this week. He's going to come back.
Oh, yeah.
And he's going to be that top home run threat that Matt Ryan has needed over the past couple of games. I could really see Roddy. Everything that I've heard from Roddy is that he's not coming back until he's 100% healthy, okay, or close enough to it.
Yeah.
So I feel like this Roddy, if he hits the field on Sunday, if he feels good enough to hit the field on Sunday, is going to be a healthier Roddy White than we saw at the beginning part of the season, which means that he can be a more viable option for Matt downfield. And I like his chances, and I love that matchup with Richard Sherman. So Roddy's going to be my guy, and I will roll the dice on him very easily. My friend.
Okay. That's a good pick.
All right.
Pretty good pick. I'm going to go with Steven Jackson.
All right.
All right. I'm buying that 116 yards Seattle Seahawks are allowing on the ground. I'm enticed.
Okay.
I'm going to believe that can happen on Sunday. I feel like the Falcons have, while the yards on the stat sheet aren't showing, that they're running better. I feel like they are. I feel like they've improved there. And I appreciated that they tried to establish that early last week, and it was working to some extent. Let's not forget, this was a 17-10 football game in the fourth quarter, or halfway through the third quarter.
Yeah.
And that's late in the game. So,
sure.
You know, that final score is, I mean, it is what it is. It is, you know, what happened happened. But they were in that game, and they were running decently. So I feel like this will be Steven Jackson's second or third game back from the injury that he missed.
Third. Okay. So the interns are saying three.
Yes. Let's trust the interns on this one.
Trust the interns on this three.
Steven Jackson's due for a big game. He had a nice game with that touchdown in the game, you know, against St. Louis, and then we hadn't seen him since, and you know, coming back, and we don't know, you know, to what extent the, you know, lingering injuries or whatever have slowed him down. So and we don't know whether that's true or not. But he's had some time. I feel like he's going to continue to adjust and get healthier. I feel good about this matchup on Sunday. I think Steven Jackson, and it's going to come on the ground too. It's going to be our most viable Falcon, and it's going to be because of Steven Jackson's work on the ground on Sunday.
Boy, we let you talk a few minutes about birds, and you just start rattling.
Yeah.
Rattle, rattle, rattle.
Yep.
You got a lot of reasons, and I like it.
All right. Well, I hope I'm right this week, because I'd like to win.
Your season kind of depends on it. So you don't want me to be 5-3-1.
No.
Tough. We still have to figure out some stakes for this, by the way.
Goodness, okay. Yeah, we should.
Might bring that interpretive dance thing into play. Who knows?
Yeah, it's going to make for an interesting offseason.
It is. All right. Well, thanks again for joining us here on the Falcon Cast. That's going to do it for us. For Daniel Cox, Jay Adams, we will see you next week.